Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6:12 from the best studio in America, the Allstate Showcase Studio, live on Michigan Avenue, home of the world champion Chicago.
No,
get them next year. Goodbye, nice job, Astros. Yes, more importantly to me, and probably to you, Blackhawks 3, yes, Flyers nothing. Goodbye, busy sports night last night because you know when I watch the games. Or listen to the games, I like to pretend I'm playing, like I did when I was 7. So I have my Hawks helmet on, and I got my stick, and I got a puck, and I'm firing shots, you know, in the kitchen against the dishwasher. And you should see the dents in that thing. And then I'm listening to the game on the app, and I'm also watching the game because I want to catch as much of Eddie and our boy Doc as well, and then I'm flipping over to baseball. So it was a busy night. So eventually, you know, like during commercial breaks, I'd take off my Blackhawks helmet. I'd put on an Astros or a Dodgers helmet, and I'd get my wiffle bat, and I'd start pounding wiffle balls around the house as well. So I had a busy night, very busy night.
How bad is it when they go to a commercial in the Hawks game and in the World Series game at the same time? I mean, that's just to me.
That's not right. Why can't they coordinate?
It happened at least twice last night.
You need to coordinate.
I thought you were going to ask him how the damage was in his kitchen from the wiffle ball and the slap shot into the
dishwasher. Wiffle ball doesn't do any damage.
The slap shot into the dishwasher.
I just don't have the bat speed I used to have. You know, that's the biggest problem. That's why I don't have damage. Hey, let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Sexual harassment stories continue to pile up. Trump's going to do the Asia trip. And Houston, as I said, won a World Series title. So Houston wins a World Series. Hurricane Harvey can kiss Houston's butt. The Dodgers didn't hit. The Dodgers become kind of like Pinella's old Seattle Mariners story. Biggest team in the regular season. Can't get it done all the way to the end. And here you go. Houston, World Series winners, first time ever. I believe the franchise is about as old as I am. Wasn't it the early 60s when it started?
Yeah, this was their 56th year.
There you
remember
go.
They were
and
the
this
old...
is my 56th year.
There you go. They were the Houston Colt 45s, and so were you.
And I was Steve Colt 45 right. Before I changed my stage name to Cochran. And I was born in the old Astrodome.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of similarities. Yeah. Next. Wonder of the world. Illinois Senator Iris Silverstein lost his leadership position yesterday, a day after a victim rights advocate accused him of sexual harassment at a public hearing. Sarah Feigenholz is a woman and a Democrat and has been around Springfield forever.
Right.
I'm gonna ask her about sexual harassment.
Yeah, absolutely, we should. Yeah.
Ira allegedly texted very graphic messages and may have even held up or approved or disapproved legislation based on whether or not he felt he was getting appropriate feedback on his sexual advances.
Advances, absolutely, yep. Yeah, it's an open investigation, too, by the way, with this.
Next, there's a producer-director in Hollywood named Brett Ratner, who's kind of a guy that thinks he's too cool for the room, always has. And he was going to direct the Oscars a couple of years ago and said some things that were completely inappropriate. And they pulled him off the Oscars. This is, I think, on a Howard Stern show. Anyway, Brett Ratner is the latest Hollywood figure to be arrested of sex, or should say accused of sexual misconduct. Separately, a guy named Michael Oreskes, the top news editor at NPR and a former Washington bureau chief at the New York Times, I believe, resigned after being accused of sexual harassment. And then there's Britain's defense secretary, a man named Michael Fallon, who resigned in a growing outcry over claims of inappropriate behavior by members of parliament. So powerful white guys, well, it's not just white guys, but, you know, powerful guys using their positions to be creeps and perverts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With regard to Brett Ratner, too, Olivia Munn, back in 2010, wrote an essay for the LA Times talking about, you know, what Ratner had allegedly done in his trailer to her when she had visited the set of a movie called After the Sunset. Wrote it in an essay, was published in the Times, but didn't name him. Just kind of talking what she had gone through as a young actress auditioning.
And again, the fact that you don't say factually what happened to you allows it to continue. Mm-hmm. This, I think, is the watershed moment where it changes. We'll see how long it lasts.
Right.
Hopefully it continues. Next. This is how numb we are to gun violence in this country on top of the other types of violence we've experienced this week. Guy walks into a Denver Walmart last night. Unidentified guy. Just walks in. Pulls a gun out. Shoots three people and kills them. Walks out, doesn't say a word. No motive. No note, as far as we know, right?
No, they just did completely nonchalant. Walked in and did what he did.
It's just insane. And to piggyback that, we are now, what, a month down the road from Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know why that lunatic shot at the concert, killed 58 people, then killed himself. And injured almost 500 in the aftermath, or during and after. The gun violence problem slash the mental health problem in this country gets bigger every day.
Mm-hmm, it does.
Next. President Trump called the New York Times on Wednesday to say he's not melting down. I'm not making that up.
That's true.
Say the inquiry into the campaign's links to Russia. I have nothing to do with him. He says, I'm not under investigation, as you know. He also disputed a Washington Post report that described him as angry at everybody. He says, it's not true. I'm not angry at anybody. Okay. You know me. I believe everything I hear. Next. And President Trump declared late Wednesday that the suspect in the New York attack should be executed. The problem with that is the justice system exists to mete out justice as the rules apply. And listen, if anybody deserves the death penalty, this creep does.
Yes.
But it's not helpful when the president of the United States weighs into a case that hasn't been tried yet, on top of the fact that the guy is talking. He is chirping like you wouldn't believe. He waived his Miranda rights. He has given details on what he did and what he planned to do and what he wasn't able to do.
And what ISIS everybody allegedly told him to say.
All of it. Mm-hmm. All of it. So the president would be helpful if he stayed out of it. The concern of the Justice Department is that the comments could hurt the prosecution of Saifullah Saipov, as defense lawyers could argue they couldn't get a fair trial. Now, the guy's not going to be walking the streets, but the president should be helping, not hurting, is the point. There's your top 6 at 6, brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I have nothing to do with Russia. To the best of my knowledge, no person that I deal with this. Now, Manafort has totally denied it. He denied it. Now, people knew that he was a consultant over in that part of the world for a while, but not for Russia. I think he represented Ukraine or people having to do with Ukraine or people that, whoever.
But in his capacity as your campaign manager, was he in touch with Russian officials during the election?
You know what? He said no. I can only tell you what he... Now, he was replaced long before the election. You know that, right?
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
A little bit early, Chuck Todd today, and we're always happy to have Chuck. 1947's a podcast, MTP Daily, and of course, Meet the Press. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
A little tired, but I'm all right. Too many nights watching the World Series.
Pretty good series. Kind of a disappointing Game 7 just for the sake of we saw such great baseball. But, boy, you got to feel, I think, for people that aren't diehard fans of either city necessarily, you got to feel good for Houston. After all Houston's been through, it's a poetic finish.
I tell you, I grew up a Dodger fan, so I'm still... I'm not going to be over that part of it for a while. But there's a lot to like about this Houston team. And what I've enjoyed about this series of both teams is that there's something about it. It didn't feel like a bunch of millionaires playing a game. It felt like a bunch of kids having a good time.
Yeah.
They're kids. They were kids having a good time. And you know what? If you're Major League Baseball and you look at the problems the NFL is having, you sit there and say, you know what? Yeah, we got a pace of play issue and little things like that. But our sport's never been played better. That's a good thing. You can't say the same thing for football right now. Their sport has been played better, and it isn't in a good place right now.
And
for baseball.
Yeah, no, I agree on both counts. Now, it's also a good night for George, because we have not had a superstar in sports named George since George the Iceman Gervin. This is a big development if your name is George. Congratulations to all of you this morning.
Good for Springer. He's doing the name George good.
Half my family.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm watching MTP Daily yesterday. You had on Corey Lewandowski, and you were making, as usual, very logical, cogent points and asking direct questions that I didn't feel like he answered all that directly. The president, his inner circle, his outer circle, his beltway, all seem to try to be pushing the narrative that this has nothing to do with him. Yeah, it does.
Right. No, I mean, these are the people that he hired. These are the people that, you know, look, here's the problem they're in. If it's not a conspiracy, it's incompetence. Their best defense is incompetence. I mean, when pressed over and over again, how did a guy like this, George Papadopoulos, a grifter, essentially, right, a policy grifter, end up in a list and in a meeting that a guy like General Keith Kellogg showed up in? And then so you sit there and you're saying, okay, if you guys were that incompetent, well, then anybody could have infiltrated this campaign.
Yep.
Because you guys don't seem to know who's in and who's out, who reported it, who was a volunteer, who was paid. You know, the thing is that Corey was a very, he's always been a very straight, honest source with me. Never lied to me. There's no doubt that campaign was chaotic in the spring. And I've no doubt that there were a lot of people coming and going. But that's the point. There are a lot of people coming and going that they weren't keeping track of. So to me, it is not hard to take the leap here that, boy, a lot of shady stuff could have been happening, and it appears that some of them might not have known.
Yeah, and well, Donald Trump or any president or candidate for a party that becomes president, or even the candidate that's nominated to be and loses, they can't be overseeing every single hiring and all of that. But there was no secret that Paul Manafort was, in quotes, a shady character for years and years in Washington, and he was hired.
Yeah. It's just not something. Can I tell you, Steve, I'm not going to get into the initial allegation that I've heard Paul Manafort connected to, but it's an allegation that goes back to the Reagan era. Mm-hmm. The point is, if you spend any time in politics in the 90s, okay, if you've spent any time at all covering politics in the 80s and 90s, or working in politics, you knew that Paul Manafort was he's one of those guys that gets all the foreign clients. And you know what? Anybody in Washington knows the guys with the foreign clients always make the most money and are doing the most questionable deals. And what I've always known is most campaigns steer clear of those guys. And most of those guys usually steer clear of domestic politics, knowing that they're nothing but controversy. What's amazing here is that Manafort's hubris, as if he thought putting himself back into the political spotlight, maybe he wanted one last hurrah, right, in domestic. But he brought a ton of scrutiny with him, and the inability of the Trump campaign, either they were so desperate for anybody that reeked of the establishment to come help them that they overlooked it, or worse.
So Chuck, is the Asia trip can't come soon enough for President Trump? Is he hoping just this will all go away when he leaves for 12 days on Friday?
I think it's certainly, you know, it's interesting. The Asia trip is both a blessing and a curse. I think it's never good to send our president overseas to arguably the most, you know, important region to our economy in the world in this week of a state. Okay. I mean, think about what the world is seeing right now. They see the American U.S. president under siege, and there's questions about how long is he going to stay in office, right? That's how the world is sort of viewing this. So it's a very bad time for the head of a government to be negotiating on behalf of the United States overseas in this political situation. But politically, if you're the president, yes, being able to focus on the job, focus on things like China and North Korea, I'm guessing is a lot more helpful to him than having to focus on Paul Manafort.
Chuck Todd, I know it's a busier day than normal. I appreciate you jumping on early. Don't forget the podcast at 1947. You can get it where you get the Cochran Show podcast as well. and compare, contrast, and check them for punctuation. And don't forget about Meet the Press, obviously, on Sunday and MTP Daily. Hope you have a great day, man.
We don't punctuate. It's all emoji. You know that. We've moved on. We're emojis.
Right. Cheeseburgers upside down, the whole problem. All right, I'll see you later.
Talking poop. It's politicians. It's always talking poop. I know.
That's quote of the day from Chuck Todd.
That's Chuck Todd. Yeah, I'm sure we can use that again and again. Eric Adelstein, Pat Brady, Mike Quigley, Congressman Mike Quigley, all coming up after 7 o'clock. We got a Hawker Riddle for Hawks tickets at 7:20. We have the big story next on 7:20 WGN.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when.
Nick DiGilio standing by.
But there's one guy on GM's Cochrane show.
Good morning, Nick.
And what he says.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Good, all right. I'm looking forward to this LBJ movie. But I wish Bryan Cranston was LBJ because I've never seen a better performance of a true historical figure than Bryan Cranston as LBJ in the HBO movie All the Way, which, of course, he also did on Broadway. Was he not available to do this movie? Why'd they go with Woody Harrelson?
I'm not really sure, but this movie's in a bad position to follow that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that pretty much is sort of the definitive portrayal of LBJ. And, you know, it's weird. Rob Reiner directed this movie, and Rob Reiner hasn't made a good movie in a really, really long time. Now, he's made some great movies in the past, and he's obviously, you know, a good director, but it's been a long time since he's made anything, you know, that's been good.
I couldn't tell you the last Rob Reiner movie, which was, wow, what a great movie.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to even think of him, you know, but you go back and just look at some of the movies he's made in the past. I'm going to say 15 years, and they've all been pretty bad. But and obviously there's no denying a lot of the great stuff he's done. You know, I mean he did A Few Good Men, he did Stand By Me, he did Princess Bride, he did Spinal Tap. I mean, so clearly he's a good filmmaker, but he's been on a rough drought, and this is not getting good reviews.
Oh, it's not.
No, it's not getting good reviews. And again, like, you know, how we opened this whole thing, Steve, it just has the unfortunate timing of, you know, following Cranston in what is, as you just said, and as we just said, the definitive performance of Lyndon Johnson. You know, and this covers Woody Harrelson plays Lyndon Johnson. He is a Senate Majority Leader and then Vice President for a while. The assassination happens and he becomes president. It covers all of that. And it's got a decent cast. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays his wife. Bill Pullman is in it. Richard Jenkins. Jeremy Donovan plays John Kennedy. T. Thomas Howell is in it, which is an interesting choice. And I love Woody Harrelson. I think Woody Harrelson is great.
I think he's a great actor.
And yeah, I think he's terrific. And I love him in pretty much everything. But the buzz on this is not good. And like we said, man, I mean, if you saw that HBO movie with Bryan Cranston, that's just the deal right there.
He is unbelievable as LBJ. Now,
absolutely.
That's the first. I wasn't old enough to remember Kennedy as president, but as a little kid, the first president I ever remember seeing on TV was LBJ. And he was in office till I was 7 years old. And then I remember everybody after that. And of course, I was an advisor to many of them. But LBJ was a Senate genius. Maybe the greatest manipulator of the rules and the ways of the Senate ever, who hated being the vice president to JFK because he had absolutely no power and really wanted to be president. But then when he became president, especially under those circumstances, hated being president. It was miserable, which is why he tapped out in 68. So I don't. The interesting thing about All the Way was it goes from the civil rights bill to him winning re-election in 64. It's really a short period of time.
But it's
a terrific movie. But what's the time frame, the historical time frame of this movie? Do you know?
It starts from him being a Senate Majority Leader leading into vice presidency and how everything that you talked about, it covers him being vice president and then and having no power whatsoever and then suddenly being thrust in to being the presidency. And I think it goes up until, I think it covers pretty much the same time period as All the Way.
Well, I mean, I'll probably see it. I'm disappointed to hear that it's probably not going to be good, but I'll probably see it. Now, to reinforce your point, I'm on the IMDb page for Rob Reiner.
Okay.
He's got Shock and Awe that is in the can, as we say. and which is about the George Bush Iraq invasion and the reporters covering it, sort of a you know, Watergate take on the Bush Iraq war.
Right.
LBJ. Being Charlie, which is a movie his son wrote about an addiction problem.
That's right.
It's a fine little movie, but it wasn't a big film. A movie called And So It Goes, which nobody remembers. Magic of Belle Isle. The movie 8, which nobody remembers. The movie Flip, which nobody remembers. The last movie that had some impact was 2007 when he did The Bucket List. But I would argue that wasn't a huge hit.
It wasn't a huge hit and also wasn't a good movie.
Rumor has it, terrible movie with Jennifer Aniston.
Yep.
Alex and Emma, 2003. Story of Us with Bruce Willis in 1999. Spinal Tap, The Final Tour of Video Short in 1998. Another documentary nobody saw in 97. The Ghosts of Mississippi.
That's probably the last one.
1996, 21 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably the last good film he made.
He didn't direct Sleepless in Seattle, did he?
No. Nor ever.
Okay, he was in it, though. Okay, got
it. But he was on a pretty good run up until The Ghost of Mississippi. The American President was a hit. North was awful.
Yeah.
Few Good Men was tremendous. Misery was a big hit. When Harry Met Sally is his movie. The Princess Bride is his movie. Stand By Me, The Sure Thing, and Spinal Tap. But for some reason, after Ghost of Mississippi, Rob kind of lost his way. It is 6:52, and Nick DiGilio is here. Actually, before I ask you about the other movies that are out this weekend, Andrea has important breaking movie news on a film she's very interested in. Go ahead.
Nick, is there really a movie coming out called Attack of the Killer Donuts?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Nick.
They're bringing back Laurence Olivier for that, or what are we doing there?
Yeah, I think Kenneth Branagh directed it, so should be.
What is it?
I would imagine it's in the same vein as Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
I thought this was a joke, and then it says donuts.
No, it's real.
But the line into the trailer says donuts have always been lethal because of the diabetes and obesity risks that they pose. But the new movie Attack of the Killer Donuts goes a step further with the fried dough confectionaries turning into bloodthirsty killers.
Wow, where do I sign up for that?
Yeah.
Fantastic. What is the new Thor movie?
Thor Ragnarok. This is, Thor is not one of the most popular titles in the Marvel movie universe. The movies do okay.
Cate Blanchett's in this movie. Mark Ruffalo's in this movie.
Yes. Mark Ruffalo will be playing the Hulk, as usual. Tessa Thompson is in the movie. Cate Blanchett, by the way, plays the villain, and she looks fantastic in this movie, and apparently she's fantastic in it. Now, here's the thing. Chris Hemsworth has voiced some issues with the Thor movies. He was getting tired of the direction they were going in. So they brought in this New Zealand comedy director named Taika Waititi, who is also in the movie. He directed an unbelievably funny movie. If you've never seen it, Steve, you really should, called What We Do in the Shadows. It's a mock documentary about vampires and how they live their lives.
All right.
And it is unbelievably funny. Seriously, What We Do in the Shadows. He directed that. He worked a lot on Flight of the Conchords. So they bring this weird New Zealand guy in, Chris Hemsworth's idea, and he evidently took the Thor stuff and decided to make it completely over the top and funny. Casting Jeff Goldblum in it, who's like doing the weird Jeff Goldblum stuff. And I've seen many clips from it, and everything I hear about this is that they take the Thor franchise and they put it in an entirely new, hilarious and surrealistic direction. And I'm very excited about this movie because they brought in a new voice to not make another same old comic book movie. They're trying something different and weird and funny. And I'm very excited about it. And all the buzz I hear about it is very good.
You know, Taika Waititi did most of the work on our 1,000th show. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, is that, did he really?
Yeah. So yeah. I'm a fan as well. A Bad Mom's Christmas is probably what I think it is, right?
Yeah. It's Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell, Catherine Hahn. They come back. It's a sequel to Bad Moms, which was horrible.
I think I was the only person who liked that movie, Nick.
Oh, my God.
Susan Sarandon shows up for this one.
Well, Susan Sarandon, Cheryl Hines, and Christine Baranski all come in as their moms, and they all come in as they're trying to get through the holiday season, and the mothers of these moms make it even harder. Here's the deal. The guys who put this movie together, they're responsible for the three Hangover movies. So enough said.
Cheryl Hines, is she old enough to play the mother of one of these women?
I think she is, yeah, but she doesn't look like it.
Okay.
But yeah.
I guess if I'm talking about I guess if I'm talking about suspending disbelief for bad moms, maybe this is not a movie I need to see.
No, I don't think so. By the way, are you watching Curb?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
I almost wore my Curb hat today, but I made a different fashion choice, and I'm sporting the Blackhawk hat. All right, so the other night I'm flipping through the TV, and, you know, that's where the TV programs are on. They're on the TV.
Right.
And I'm flipping through the television, and
were you flipping through your set?
I was flipping through my set, and had to arrange the rabbit ears a little bit. But there's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to watch this now because Nick's got it on the big screen coming up.
Yeah. We had so many requests for this over the years. I mean, by the way, in December it'll be my sixth year. We'll completed my sixth year doing my film club, and for all six of those Novembers. People have come up to me and said, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Finally, I was like, okay, let's do it. So the people wanted it. The people got it. And I've rewatched it a couple of times in the past few weeks because I hadn't seen it in a long time. And, man, is it a funny movie. And, God, is John Candy good in it.
He's great.
He's great. And it's a great Thanksgiving movie. We're showing it on Tuesday, November 14th. $14 to get in. Free parking. Free popcorn. You can have some dinner at the restaurant. Or you can actually sit in your seat, have them bring you dinner. You don't even have to get out of your seat. And then I'll introduce the movie at 8 o'clock, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. And it's just everybody's been requesting this one for Thanksgiving. So to celebrate, I mean, a lot of people think it's the best Thanksgiving movie ever made. And so big laughs in that one. And
yeah. I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Here's the only problem I have with it.
What's that?
If you are stranded in St. Louis and you really have to get home to Chicago, you drive. Even if your car has no top left on it because it was taken off in a shearing accident, just drive. So actually, I will really suspend disbelief to watch it again.
The two moments in that movie that destroy me, okay? When they are driving down the street and John Candy, or driving down the road, John Candy falls asleep and they wake up and they're grinding between two semis.
Yep.
And they cut to Steve Martin and he's a skeleton. And then they cut back to John Candy, and he's dressed as the devil. That sight gag destroys me every time. But the best moment in the movie is the scene that earned it the R rating, and that's the scene with Steve Martin at the rent-a-car table, dropping F-bombs at Edie McClurg. It is just beautiful. It's the only reason the movie's rated R.
Right.
I mean, but that is so – it's so, so funny.
Yeah, and Dave will never recover because back in the Kathy and Judy convention days, there was a movie year, and Dave and I recreated the Those Aren't Pillows scene for one of the clips.
Yes, we did.
Much to the dismay of all the hotel guests.
Yeah, who thought we were shooting Japanese gay porn in one of the rooms.
And I was a witness to that, and it was very disturbing.
Yeah, Mary's been in therapy ever since.
Okay, Mary, it was just...
That same year that you guys did that, they made me do the Are You Talking to Me monologue from Taxi Driver.
That's right. That's right. Kathy and Judy. Why did they hate us? All right. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. It's Nick DiGilio. You want to do the replay? Sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Let's spend some time and savor this Blackhawks win.
Chicago Blackhawks open the month of November here at the United Center looking to reverse their fortunes and with a few days to regroup and reload after a couple of tough weekend losses. From the draw, the Hawks control. Here's a shot from Franzen, left circle. They score! Finally, a power play goal! Franzen let it rip from the left circle. Elliott made the save with the pads, but he left the rebound in the paint of the crease. And Artem Anisimov came along and swatted it home. Hawks lead 1-0 on a power play goal. Been a while since I said that. Now Tays steals the puck. Hawk line on a breakaway over the flyer line. Down the slot with the backhand. He scores! 2-0 Hawks as the captain cashes in. He brought it to the front of the flyer net. It went from his forehand to his backhand and snuck. stuck it through Elliott's legs. It's 2-0 on. Back for Taves at the Flyer line. He kicks the puck down along the end boards. Grover off there for the Flyers. Up the right wing to Voracek. Rink wide pass to Ruan. A breakaway with a hot line on the slot. He fires and Crawford makes the save with the pad. Grover off from the left point. Spins it down in behind the Hawk net. Flyers got six attackers and an empty net. From the right wing corner, Voracek centers. Picked off by the Hawks. Here's DeBrincat with a long shot. He scores! Into an empty net and the Flyers in. It's his second NHL goal. An empty net goal makes it 3-0 Hawks with 1:49 left in the third. The Hawks beat the Flyers 3-0 here tonight. Career shutout number 22 for Corey Crawford. And the Hawks, on the strength of a power play goal, an even strength goal, and an empty net goal, have put away the Philadelphia Flyers 3-0.
Again, sponsored by our friends at Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Win tickets in about 20 minutes. Stand by. We'll do a Hawker riddle there. Video in the background, Dave, as we go to news now, and I'm sure you'll talk about this throughout the morning, but the Houston Astros shortstop, the legendary jazz great Chick Corea, apparently proposed to his girlfriend.
Carlos Correa. And yes,
oh, it wasn't legendary jazz great Chick Corea?
It was not Chick Corea.
Oh.
But yes, he, on live national television on the post game,
proposed.
He got down on one knee.
She said no because she's in love with Tommy Lasorda. Nobody saw that
That's
coming.
That's true.
The Steve Cochran Show.
That's the thing that the Democrats did best. They lost the election, and they didn't know what happened. It's the thing they did best. They did a rotten job of running. But to convince people about this hoax, that was probably the thing that they did best, but it is one great hoax.
It was a hoax.
The whole Russian thing is what it's turned out to be. This was the Democrats coming up with an excuse for losing an election. They didn't know what to say, so they made up the whole Russia hoax.
No, Russia did not help me. Okay? Russia. I call it the Russian hoax.
And then we danced.
Oh, for the love of Boris Badenoff. It's 7:13, and Congressman Mike Quigley joins us, a proud member of your United States Congress, a member of the Judiciary Committee, Oversight and Government Reform, and friend of the program. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. I heard you reference Boris Badenoff. I was hoping you'd have Moose and Squirrel on.
Well, you know what? I think Moose and Squirrel are under investigation as well, and they should be.
Well, they were the interlocutories.
All right, so here's my question, and you would know the answer to this. Is there reason to be concerned about Mueller's future, or is there a way for Congress to provide some protection that he'll be able to finish his investigation?
It's a good question. It's a tough one as to whether Congress can protect him. I mean, there's any number of ways the president can take a tack to go after the investigation. The pardoning of the sheriff in Arizona is at least one of them, because it sends a message to those involved, hey, you don't have to cooperate with lawful court orders, in other words, subpoenas from someone like Mueller, because I'll take care of you in the end. So the potential for preemptive pardoning and or firing. So there have been occasional burst of Republicans saying he shouldn't do this, but they're certainly on the Senate side. The Republicans are in no rush, as we have seen, to do preventative statutory language to prevent the president from doing this. And here's what I would stress with folks. If you've been in the investigation to the extent I have as a member of the committee, it is apparent to me that this president and his associates were willing to do anything to obtain power. What makes them think that he wouldn't do anything to retain the power?
I would add, I agree with you, and I would add to that, no matter how much of a supporter you may be of President Trump, as a supporter of the United States of America and the office of the president, don't you want answers to questions that have been raised about what the conduct of the man who currently occupies it was and those that surround him were? By the way, if Mueller comes back and says, we got nothing on Trump. Yeah, he's loud and he's a tweeter and he says this and he says that. I will absolutely go by Mueller's findings because he would have done the investigation.
I respect him. I have faith in the investigation on the Mueller side.
But you got to let it run its course.
Absolutely. What I tell folks who are supporters of the president, and I hear it all, I mean, after Charlottesville, I had someone say, yeah, you're relitigating the election. And I said, I don't think so. And some of you are relitigating the Civil War. But let him do what he has to do. You could quite easily, here's what I would tell you, putting aside Trump's policies, you could quite easily see circumstances in which the Russians would delve into elections and help the other party, right? If it was a, what they perceived to be a very hawkish Republican candidate with a likelihood of winning, threatened them. You know, when we're hearing now in history that the Russians did offer the John F. Kennedy campaign dirt on Nixon, and they were refused. So that was at least the first time that happened. You could also appreciate this, and I'm going to be talking about this in the coming weeks. The Russians hacked into dozens of state boards of election.
Yep.
And they at least got to the door of the voting machines.
Yep.
Much remains to be discerned exactly how far they got. But as Director Comey said, they'll be back. My message is I don't think they've left. And when I asked the former Homeland Security chief on in an open session, I said, is it not true that most entities that have been hacked don't know they've been hacked, have to be told by someone else that they have been hacked, and it's sometimes years before they know? The Russians are so good, I don't know right now if we could tell if they were on those systems. So there are programs we can put in place. But again, if you love this president, God bless, you should still be very concerned about the Russian, what the Russians did and what they can still do. And again, even yesterday's hearing ought to concern you even more because clearly they weren't just trying to influence an election, which was the consensus of the intel community, the unanimous sense of the intel community that they attempted to influence the election. But they are also attempting to sow discord in this country using social media platforms. All three of the entities here yesterday agreed that that was the case.
Yeah, so therefore, more reason, and more with Congressman Quigley in just a second, more reason than ever for the president to step up and say, of course I want to get to the bottom of what Russia's up to, because they were trying to disrupt his presidency after he was elected. It's 7:19. Congressman Mike Quigley is with us. You follow him online, of course. And Congressman Andrea is going to be talking about this at the bottom of the hour. But what was the question you're going to be bringing up?
Well, President Trump tweeting yesterday, he wants to send the New York truck driver who barricaded through all the people in Lower Manhattan, the man accused of it, I should say, because he hasn't gone to trial yet. But the suspect who's in custody wants to send him to the death penalty or now possibly even Guantanamo Bay. What are your thoughts on the president tweeting that?
Yeah, it's distressing that we, first of all, are tweeting important policy discussions with the president of the United States. You know, and it's gone on with North Korea and so forth. Just that aspect of it is bothering because can you imagine during the Cuban Missile Crisis, John F. Kennedy tweeting Khrushchev bad, right? This is important stuff. And it deserves a
no, we can't
discussion.
Imagine.
You shouldn't tweet about it. Second, Guantanamo is an extraordinary recruiting tool across the world for those who hate us. And it is not who we are. Now, the person who did this should go through our justice system. I'd like the president to tell me when someone who's done something like this has slipped through the cracks, using terms I think he would use, of the justice system, and hasn't been punished. Trust the system. Let's show the world that we're a democracy that has rule of law and doesn't skip that. So it's as frustrating as it can possibly be. This is a tragedy. This is something that we need to gird ourselves against. It concerns me greatly in my own hometown. We have soft targets. We have vulnerabilities. We need to address those. This is a horrible distraction that it's counterproductive.
Yeah, it's not helpful. And meanwhile, we don't know anything about what happened in Vegas and the majority of the top 10 worst terrorist hits that have occurred in this country are domestic. And social media enragement that goes on after people come here. You can argue all day about whether a wall would work and how screwed up our immigration policy is, because frankly, it is a mess. But does it directly lead to these sort of acts, or do we need to deal with the social media problem that we already have? And I know Congress is attempting to do that, but what is Congress doing about mental health? Because again, you bring up guns, everybody runs in their own direction. You bring up something as simple as bump stocks, and you can't get that done. But mental health, it starts when kids are little and before somebody's 21 and of age where they can go off and do their own crazy thing. Why can't you guys in Congress come to some sort of bipartisan agreement on what to do about funding mental health in this country?
It's one of the few areas that I see bipartisan support. There are bills, there's legislation, there are appropriation efforts to go in the direction you're talking about, and I obviously fully support them. It just hasn't gotten over the hump to get to a critical juncture where it gets voted on the floor. So there are efforts out there. We're going to do the best we can. At this point in time, there's seemingly little bandwidth here because this is an administration that had the biggest majorities in the House since the Hoover administration, majorities in both houses, and we haven't accomplished anything yet. If they reach over across the aisle to us on that and other issues, I think we can get something done. If it's, hey, we don't need your votes, we're going to take an extremist attitude on any issue, I just think we'll continue to have a lack of productivity.
Pat Brady's here. Before we let you go, Congressman, Pat, your thoughts on one of the other main issues of the day?
Hey, Congressman, hey, thanks for all your work on this oversight, too, on this Russia issue. You always have a very measured approach to this. I think a lot of us appreciate it because I do believe this is one of the most important issues facing the country. But today the big news might be the tax plan. What are the chances there? Any Democrats going to get on board? You like what you see or not?
Well, they were supposed to roll it out yesterday. It's supposed to roll out today. The big Roman numerals of it are troubling. I mean, where are the deficit hawks, right?
And we don't hear from them anymore.
They were chest dumping during the Obama administration, but this allows a $1.5 trillion increase to the deficit. As one of 36 total members of the House that voted for the Simpson-Bowles version when it got to the House, Cooper LaTourette, I get that the deficit matters. And if this is intended to spur growth, if you do tax cuts to spur growth, it works a heck of a lot better if it's revenue neutral. This is far from that. And the bottom line is, I don't think this is really tax reform. This is just cuts. And unfortunately, about 80% of the benefits in this package just go to about 1% of the public. And I'd really be curious how my colleagues across the aisle in Illinois vote for this, because the last version I saw, you lose the deduction for state and local taxes, which is property taxes. Hey, that's a big deal if you live in the Chicagoland area, because that's a huge deduction.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem. There goes my alleged $4,000 I get every year. Congressman, thank you, and I know you're excited about the Hawks win last night. We're going to give away some Hawks tickets here, and I will see you at the Madhouse.
Can I give you a fast fact?
Yeah.
How quickly did they score two goals last night?
20 seconds.
Bill Mozienko, in 1952, himself scores three goals in 21 seconds against the New York Rangers. Still hard to believe that could happen.
Congressman, sometimes you know too much.
Sorry about that. Have a good day.
Enjoy your day. Thank you. Hawker Riddle time. Hawker Riddle time for Hawks tickets. Here's the deal. I've got a pair of tickets to see the Hawks and the Montreal Canadiens. Sunday, November 5th, you'll be entered to win four season tickets for next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com.
Hawker Riddle.
going to give you a riddle. Get your Blackhawk tickets, yeah. It's written by John DeCoste. It's part of his prison work release program situation. So you got to guess who this is about, this riddle.
Okay, ready.
No one else is doing riddles. We're doing the riddles. Born in the year 1953, not here in Chicago, but in Mississippi. Not talking at night, made her fortune and fame. And, oh, by the way, she's known by one name.
Oh.
First correct caller, 312-981-7200. Born in the year 1953, not here in Chicago, but in Mississippi. Not talking at night, made her fortune and fame. And, oh, by the way, she's known by one name. You know who it is?
I do. No, I really do this time.
You really do?
I really, really do.
I do.
Me too.
All right, we'll keep it to yourselves.
I do.
Eric Edelstein will join us as well, and the big story is next. We'll get you a winner in a moment on 720 WGN. Lisa's in Chicago. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate that. Would you tell us who I was talking about in the Hawker Riddle?
Oprah.
Oprah. Oprah.
There you go.
Andrea, that's what you Greek people say at weddings, right?
It's Oprah. Oprah.
Oh, Oprah. Well, that's different.
Very close.
Hawks in Montreal, the Canadiens, on Sunday. This Sunday, as a matter of fact. Who are you going to bring to the game?
A friend of mine that's a big hockey fan.
Very nice. Hope you have a great time.
Thank you so much.
All right, you hold on. You're also registered for season tickets for next season from Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Time for the big story. Is this sponsored by Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady? I'm being told yes, it is.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
Pat Brady's here, and Eric Edelstein's here as well. Pat, name of your company is?
Next Generation Strategy.
Eric?
AL Media.
And we're just talking to Eric off the air. You got a bunch of governor's races your company's working on?
We do. We're obviously working the Illinois one. We've talked about that one before for Chris Kennedy. We're working in Iowa for Fred Hubbell, in Maine for Janet Mills, as the Attorney General, and a few other states as well.
Speaking of Mr. Kennedy, the next Lincoln Forum event is only about 10 days away. What's the story on that, Pat?
2 weeks from today, LincolnForum.org. We have Chris Kennedy, our guest's honored guest.
Like I said, it's 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks from today.
So it's 2 weeks from today?
Two weeks from today.
So 2 weeks then.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. 2 weeks from today.
But get your tickets
you
now.
You guys done?
Yeah. But, actually, we're gonna do our version of Who's On First now.
Yeah, it's good. Ticket sales good, so grab your tickets. Come on by. Had two great events, and really looking forward to hearing from Chris Kennedy.
And that'll be 2 weeks from today at LincolnForum.org. Got it.
And you're not invited.
Sarah Feigenholz is invited. I asked the representative to come on because there is a continued focus, or an increased focus, I should say, and appropriately so, on sexism in Springfield in particular. And Sarah's been there a while. Let me go to the phone now. Good morning, Ms. Feigenholz.
How are you, sir?
Nice to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure.
We have this Ira Silverstein story that broke yesterday, but that's not the only incidence of this. What do you want to say about it?
You know, Steve, I think that Springfield doesn't have an HR department. We do have an apparatus set up. We have an inspector general, and we have just learned that spot has been vacant for 2 years. We've learned that the job has been offered to two or three people who haven't taken it, or they've rejected it, or the caucuses haven't agreed on it. And so bottom line is we've got to get down to the bottom of it, because there are some complaints, not cases, that are pending that need to be addressed.
There was a time here where there was a particular offender that was in the building. And I was always nervous about seeing some of these college kids coming through, you know, girls 20, 21, 22, who he would call in for meetings. And at one point I walk into his office and he had one of them changing a light bulb so he could stare at her from behind, up on a desk. And I took her aside and said, don't ever be in a room with this guy alone again. And if you have a problem, you know, talk to our HR department. And then I closed the door and yelled at him. But having said all of that, do you have a similar sense of trying to protect the younger, I don't know whether any other way to put this, the more naive folks that come through Springfield now, or have you always felt that way?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Steve, because it was a young woman and many young women actually that triggered this whole thing. Sure. when they posted the Illinois Facebook page and started telling their stories. And I actually felt like I was watching some of these young women who I'd mentored get. It was really very, very vivid. And the story you tell reminds me of how I felt when I read their stories. This is absolutely intolerable. We should have a zero tolerance policy. Yep. Anybody in the corporate world, a person had their desk is packed up and they're walked out the door and their attorney walks into the office with the CEO and says, you know, just whatever you do when you get sued, settle. There's really no way around this. So, you know, we don't have an HR department in Springfield. And so we are still clearly needing to fine-tune our process because this has been going on and it's getting, you know, it's getting worse and there are less and less women who are coming to Springfield to participate in the policy process, which is not a good thing.
No, it's a bad,
Sarah,
the bad thing.
What are the repercussions? I mean, with regard to this, you know, the allegations against Ira Silverstein and trying to allegedly block a bill because this woman, this victim's rights advocate who testified had a boyfriend at the time. What would, if these are found out to be true that this did happen, what are the repercussions and should there be more tough, there should be tougher restrictions in place for this type of behavior?
Yes. Right now the process is that the complaint is filed and it goes to the inspector general. If the inspector general deems that it is serious enough, it goes to the ethics commission, which is made up of a group of legislators, two from each caucus. But since the IG was not in, there was no inspector general in place, there was no one to kick it from a complaint to
ridiculous.
A case.
It's just ridiculous. Well, obviously, that's the first problem to solve. But I appreciate the perspective because it needs to come from someone like you with standing and obviously a woman that can speak to the question. So we'll have you back on about this, but I appreciate it.
It gets worse. I mean, if I am a lobbyist, not on the, you know, not a state legislator or, you know, a staff, I have no place to go. So what Senate Bill 402 would do is, everybody is going to get trained, from legislators to staff, and lobbyists have to get trained if they want to get certified and come do business in Illinois.
Seems fair.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, everybody needs to hit the reset button. There is a whole different the nature and the culture of Springfield has got to change. We need more women, not less, in Springfield, and they should not be intimidated or be power played. This has been going on for so long that even everybody is asking themselves what they've done and looking in the mirror. Everybody. How have I said, if you don't, we all have to check ourselves. We all have to look in the mirror and say, what are we doing here? What
Absolutely.
Kind of power plays are we playing?
And by the way, that's
this
men.
This is happening to men, Steve.
That's it. It's men and women. It's men and women.
Right.
You know, and here's the thing. You may never have sexually harassed someone, but as a man, you may have said something inappropriate that you need to make amends for. And you need to do an inventory of all of that. All right. Thank you, Sarah Feigenholz. Go ahead and check out Sarah online anytime. Sorry about the stop-start situation here with our technical issue, but Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here. And Pat, you read the indictment on Manafort's arrest, Manafort and company, from a prosecutorial standpoint. I mean, the guy's going to jail, right?
12-15. His sentencing range, but I think the bigger point is, and that Manafort investigation has been going on for quite some time. It's very detailed. It's been going on for years. But here's the deal, and this is what, if you just take the big picture of this, we've already established, I think conclusively, and Congressman Quigley said today, the Russians were trying to interfere with our elections. They've been doing it for years. So you go to point two, how could they effectuate this interference? Well, it appears that you have a guy like Manafort who's deeply involved with this Ukrainian guy who's a puppet of the Russians. And also remembering the Russians are run by a former KGB agent. So you've got their desire to do it. You have potential conduits. And then the thing they threw in 3 hours after the Manafort indictment with this Papadopoulos coming in that actually had contact with Russian, which basically these are Russian spies. This professor is not a professor. He's a spy. They had somebody they thought they could turn, at least to get the word to the White House or the Trump campaign, that the Russians had information on Hillary Clinton, which was their mechanism to influence elections. The point is, the steps for them to effectuate this, they appeared to be, so far from what we've seen, they appeared to be fairly successful. Now, what this Papadopoulos knows, what he said.
Papadopoulos, you're dropping a syllable.
Yeah,
Listen, I just figured out how to do Devolantis. So.
Yeah, I understand that.
Devolantis.
Sorry, Devolantis. Yeah, I apologize to the Greek community.
It's all Greek dogs. Yeah.
The bigger point is, if this guy has information, if he was wired up, if he has emails and talked to people that are close to the administration within the campaign or actually produced these guys to the campaign, then the Trump campaign has problems.
My question is, Pat, if let's say it was as benign, and I use that word loosely, as someone said, oh, hey, these guys may have some information we should get. I mean, you've been on a lot of campaigns. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Sure. Yes, good judgment would say, well, shit, this is coming from a foreign government. We can't do this. But if you found out that somebody had some information on a campaign, more often than not, you say, well, let's listen to it, don't you? Or is that a crime on its face?
Just to listen to it?
Yeah.
I don't think so. But, I mean, you'd think to me, even if you're the least experienced campaign person in the world, when you're talking about a foreign government trying to influence relations,
right,
you'd at least run it up the flagpole.
Right.
The point is that the more I read this in the indictments and in the plea deal, the Greek guy's plea deal, excuse me.
Yeah. Now it's in your head. Now you don't
know. I'm totally in my head. They find useful idiots. I mean, these are spies. They're trying to find people that don't get it and can get me in.
A couple degrees removed.
Right. Yeah. And they have conversations with people. I mean, you saw the picture of this guy at the table with Trump, and you heard what Trump said to the Washington Post. He's one of our top advisors. Whether he was or not, he still may be talking to Manafort or people within the campaign that have influence. We're a long way from getting Donald Trump, but the point is they're a lot closer to getting what I think they need to lay out a scenario a jury could buy that, hey, they really did participate with the Russians in trying to influence the election.
Well, let me leave you with this, and I'd like your take, both of you, up front on this. If you assume that what Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and MySpace and what's the other one that's no longer a business, all said yesterday on Capitol.
Friendster.
All said yesterday on Capitol Hill that, yes, they tried to get Donald Trump elected, they being the Russians, and then they tried to disrupt the country, that they messed with the Trump presidency after he was in office. Okay, if we assume that's true.
Those are acts of war.
Well, they're not only acts of war. If we assume that's true, what possible reason could the president of the United States have to not support and endorse the investigation to its fullest to get answers?
Because it's potential he or his family members could go to the penitentiary.
Self-preservation.
Self-preservation.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying...
I just wasn't sure if you...
It wasn't a rhetorical question.
Oh, was it?
No, I know that, but I'm saying, is there any other reason? Of course there isn't.
No.
So the point is, if Trump really wants to serve this country as a president of the United States, he says, they're messing with the country, it's not an election question, well, of course I want answers. That's what the public, I think, needs to understand. And I don't think that got a little buried yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, he's always, as soon as Russia comes up, he goes crazy. He loses his mind. You know, it's the woman doth protest too much. You know, I don't mean to bring I don't mean to bring Shakespeare into your show.
Well, you normally do.
You know, I mean, he goes crazy. He flies off the handle whenever Russia comes up, which just suggests that it's obviously a nerve for him.
Sure, and you make the great point. And a lot of people on the Republican side are saying, why aren't we just focusing on Russia and their bad acts? And I kind of somewhat agree with that, but the reality is we can't ignore our own criminal laws, and if their criminal laws are violated, they need to be prosecuted. I still think that the biggest risk to the president is not the Russia thing, it's obstruction. When he fired Comey and then said he fired him because of the investigation. And to me, that's clear cut. I read other things where people disagree, but you cannot impede the lawful administration of justice. And I think that's what clearly the president has done in this case. But
if this goes worst case scenario and he fires Mueller, it's game over, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, how could any of the Republicans at that point defend him?
I think Congressman Quigley made the point, maybe it was Chuck Todd, that everybody's on the brink right now of... I think they're waiting to see what happens with this tax plan because the people are really fearful what's going to happen in the House.
Mike Pence measuring for drips?
I mean, I've said it before. The point at which it all flips with the Republicans in Congress is when they feel their re-elections are in jeopardy. And if he fires Mueller, that's the straw that broke the camel's back. It isn't And it's sad. It's not because they'll say, oh, that's wrong, and it's their self-preservation at that point.
Lincoln Forum.
LincolnForum.org, 2 weeks, November 16th. Chris Kennedy. Should be great. I think we're going to get
Chris
somebody.
Chris Kennedy Papadopoulos?
Sorry.
Yes.
I'll teach you.
Sorry.
During the news, I'll give you a
tutorial.
Sorry,
my Greek. I'll go buy some Greek food.
A Greek lexicon.
Yes, Chris Kennedy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
You try to pronounce it.
The world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay.
What's the matter?
I'm sad that the World Series is over.
It's always sad for me when baseball ends because it means winter is 10 minutes away.
Well, it's sad for me because now I won't be able to see Larry King as much as I'd like to.
When we come back, Larry King's longstanding passionate affair with Mary Hart. It's the only explanation of why they were sitting next to each other.
They were, I think, two seats apart last night.
Oh, they were.
One
they
or two seats
fighting.
Apart last night.
Wow,
you know, so it doesn't look conspicuous. They put some schmo in between them. But was it you that
was that
up?
Bobby Schmo, the agent? Bobby Schmo? Yeah, was that
Bobby Schmo.
Yeah.
He's the brother of Lefty Schmo.
Lefty Schmo.
Who was also
Bobby
a famous
Schmo.
Hollywood agent.
Yeah.
Was it you that brought up the question of where are Larry King's kids? Is that you or somebody else
no,
was talking to me.
Me
yesterday? That he's got kids. Why aren't they at the in these $6,000 per seat?
Well, his kid because
World
his kids are 57 years old. His kids are mine.
Because he's with Mary Hart.
Yeah,
I thought he had younger kids. Now
he's got one kid that I think I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, Dave. You could check it out from your fine sources in sports. Larry King's son Chance, I think, is his name.
Mm-hmm. The rapper.
Yes, Chance the rapper.
Chance the Rapper King.
Chance the Rapper. Larry told me like 10 years ago, this kid's, hello, Steve, hello. This kid's a great baseball player. He's going to make it someday. And I think he's either on the minors or.
He was drafted by the White Sox.
Yeah. All right, here's Lin-Manuel Miranda's was in town. Gary Oldman in town.
Yep.
Lion King news, U2 news, updates on the sexual assault situation in Hollywood, all coming up.
Steve, this update.
And Dean is sad.
Larry King's son, Chance, is 20 years old, and he's got another son named Cannon, who's 19.
Oh, so Cannon's the younger one.
Cannon is the 19-year-old. Yeah. But Cannon and Chance.
Chance is the one who was drafted.
You know, when Cannon was growing up, he thought Larry was a Harry Potter character. He didn't know he was his dad. There we go.
Calling his name. Oh.
The band was on break. And sometimes we don't give them time enough to get back.
And you got to have a smoke. You got to have a smoke.
Right? Listen, U2 is coming to Chicago, and I'm going to give Dean a chance to guess my favorite all-time U2 song in just a second, but when?
They will be here May 22nd at the United Center, but tickets are going to go on sale in a couple of weeks, November 20th. They're doing it through something that's called Ticketmaster's Verified Fan Service. This is a process in which you have to register a couple of days ahead of time before you buy the tickets, and this is supposed to weed out the bots, you know, the computer buys, the scalpers, you know, all those people.
To give that, more people a chance to get tickets?
Fans, to give the fans a chance. If you're a Citibank cardholder, pre-sale is going to start on November the 14th. But, yeah, May 22nd at the United Center, and I've already put in a word to their people that Steve's favorite U2 song.
What do you think it is?
Is still haven't found what I'm looking for.
That's incorrect.
With or without you.
That's incorrect, but I do like when you sing it. Dave, my favorite U2 song.
My favorite U2
song. That's incorrect. Mary, my favorite U2 song. Also incorrect.
Oh, my favorite. Can I guess one more?
Yeah.
Where the Streets Have No Name.
No, that's pretty good, though.
How about I'm an Englishman in New York? Oh, wait, that was Sting.
Wait.
That was different.
Sunday Bloody Sunday.
No, Sunday Bloody
Sunday. Okay, I'm out.
No.
Did you say Beautiful Day?
It's not Beautiful Day.
Careless Whisper?
It is Careless Whisper.
That's
no, it's If. Remember what? If the Bread song when U2 did the cover? No, this is my favorite U2 song. Love comes to town, I'm gonna jump that train. When love comes to town, I'm gonna catch that plane. May not go to heaven, let you down, but I did what I did before love came to town. Now I know what you're saying. You're saying, Steve, isn't that B.B. King?
That sounds like him and Lucille.
U2 and B.B. King did When Love Comes to Town.
Well, that doesn't count.
Oh, of course it does. Listen. She's making promises they'll soon forget. She's painted the lace of her wedding gown. But I left her standing before love came to town. Ran into a children when I had a kid. It's just the best. Greatest U2 song ever. So, I don't know. What do they call the Cardinals Park in St. Louis? Is it the
Bush.
New Bush?
Yes.
I'm at the New Bush Stadium, and U2 is playing there. And I'm waiting all night for this song. Yeah. I mean, I love U2, but I've seen a bunch of U2 concerts. And Dean, you know what it's like when they go, and just play my song.
Right.
Just play my song.
I don't want to hear the other ones.
We're down to the encores. Yeah. I haven't heard When Love Comes to Town.
I saw U2 at the United Center a couple of years ago, and they opened with Vertigo, because it was the Vertigo tour. And then they finished with Vertigo, and people are saying, did they forget that they already played this? They played the same song twice.
Did they play my song?
No.
No, they didn't.
That's why I was so disappointed.
So did they ever play your song yet?
The second to last song in the encore.
See?
They had somebody come out that sort of looked like B.B. King if the lighting was bad, but he wailed. He wailed. I don't even know who the guy was. So, yeah, it's my favorite U2 song. Well, we covered that. I think it's important for the audience to know.
Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Wham, again.
Was that a comment on the show, or that's the song you thought?
That's a comment on this bit.
Okay. The new Lion King movie is going to be live action?
It's going to be live action, and I don't 100% understand.
I don't either.
How this is going to work, because they've lined up amazing talent, and they announced the full cast yesterday, the final name in the lineup. Beyonce, who is going to be Nala, the lion love interest of Simba, who is going to be played by Donald Glover from the
But is she going to be dressed up in a lion suit?
Well, I don't know if they're going to be dressed up in animal suits or... I don't know. It's too early to tell. They're working on it. It's not going to be out till July of 2019.
Weird part is The Rock is playing the baby lion that gets lifted up. So whoever's playing a dad better be pretty strong. What do you know about this?
Hey, Dean, I have a request. Can we stop doing Lion King stories? Because every time we do one, Mike, the producer in the producer's booth, sings the Lion King song at the top of his lungs.
Which one? Circle of Life?
Driving me crazy.
That's actually not a Lion King song. That's from Bar Mitzvah.
He sounds like Enya.
Yeah, like you get to the next verse and it's have Nagila, have two Nagila, have three Nagila. Great. They're pretty small.
James Earl Jones is going to be back as Mufasa. Alfre Woodard, John Oliver is going to be in this, and Seth Rogen, Keegan Michael Key, Billy Eichner.
How do they do this live?
I do not understand. I think it's you know John Favreau's directing it, who did Jungle Book.
Yeah,
where it was a combination of humans and animation. So maybe it's going to be something like that. We just don't know yet. There's not one inch of footage on this yet.
Now, I will say this. Beyonce was in one of the Austin Powers movies. I think it was the last one. She was great.
She
had great comic timing. And you're thinking, this chick can do movies forever.
Yeah,
she's tremendous.
She's a gold member.
She's great.
Yeah. That's the way we talk in Hollywood. and did she do a single movie after that?
Uh-uh.
So weird.
She did the Super Bowl.
Whatever happened to Beyonce? Did she ever make any money?
She did the Super Bowl.
Faded away.
Right.
She just disappeared.
Practically no. She's had a couple of kids, but...
Mike was asking, was she in Dreamgirls?
Oh, I think she was.
She was in Dreamgirls.
Or maybe that was Solange.
No, she was.
She was, okay.
Now she has to use her last name because no one knows her anymore.
She didn't win the Academy Award like Jennifer Hudson did.
And do we know, because it's your real estate career as well, do we know if Beyonce and Jay-Z used David Hochberg on the mortgage for their $400 million house in Beverly Hills? All right, you can get back to that.
We do not know.
Celebrities
that.
In Chicago yesterday. Why was Gary Oldman here?
I was busy chasing everybody around yesterday. Sure. Gary Oldman is starring in a new movie. Print this. This is my prediction. Gary Oldman will win the Academy Award for Best Actor.
For this movie?
For this movie that's called Darkest Hour, in which he plays Winston Churchill.
Really?
You will not even recognize him. Not digitally made up where the computer changes him to look like Winston Churchill. Actual real makeup. And he's phenomenal in this. It's such a powerful movie about the 4 weeks in London when it appeared as though Hitler was about to invade and conquer the United Kingdom. And he's amazing in this role. But so he was in town talking about that. We did a long interview that we're going to play on my Sunday show this week. But we also talked about him being here in Chicago and bringing back some memories from another movie that he did here.
Does it bring back Dark Knight memories for you?
It does indeed. Everywhere I go, to me, is now a location. And even from the room of the hotel, I think I recognize a rooftop. It's like, yeah, we filmed on that rooftop of it.
Yeah, there aren't too many people that can recognize the city from rooftops alone. But
yeah, we did
it. With that unique qualification.
Yeah, Chris Nolan, he likes his rooftops. So does Batman.
Yeah, so he had some great memories about Chicago and filming with Heath Ledger here, and about this amazing role. The movie called The Darkest Hour that will open in December here in Chicago. Also in town yesterday was the creator and the original star of Hamilton, the American musical, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who was here, who is of Puerto Rican descent, and was at the National Museum of Puerto Rican Arts and Culture yesterday simply to raise awareness. He said, "I know that if I show up someplace, cameras are going to follow. And I just want to remind people that there is still a crisis in Puerto Rico. 70% of the island still does not have power. Much of it still does not have water. All of this going on after Hurricane Maria there." So,
and possibly because a scam contract was executed.
Exactly.
And a firm of about four people was hired from Montana. And who knows how much time was lost with that. By the way, if you're an Anthony Bourdain fan, he was in Puerto Rico a week before the hurricane hit, and that episode runs this weekend on CNN.
Yeah, so we talked about all of that with Lin, and again, I'm going to run the full Lin-Manuel Miranda interview on my Sunday show this coming weekend. But one of the things that we also talked with Lin-Manuel about was he has just completed filming the Mary Poppins sequel, Mary Poppins Returns, and he gave us a little bit of information about that.
You're done filming with it, right?
We're done filming. We finished June of this year, and it's going to take a while to come out. It comes out Christmas of next year, and that's mainly because there are some elements that really honor the original, the animation sequences that just are going to take a long time to make. But yes, I got to play with Dick Van Dyke for a day and a half.
What is that like?
I wish I were as spry at age 37 as he is at 91.
Yeah.
He was incredible. I nerded out with him about Bye Bye Birdie and Broadway and working with Chita Rivera. And also, he has such fond memories of working on that film. To be with him was really a dream come true. And he was, you want your heroes to be as awesome as you hope they are, and he totally is.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, right?
Very cool. All right, Dean will update you on TV on Dustin Hoffman, Brett Ratner, and Kevin Spacey and the continued sexual harassment updates coming out of Hollywood. Andre will give you a story on Chrissy Hynde coming up. And what's in the big story next?
Big story, we have identified the Walmart shooter in Colorado. Extensive manhunt is underway for him. Yep.
Dean, you've done fine work here.
And so have you, Steve. Godspeed to
Godspeed
you.
Godspeed to you. Big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
This George Papadopoulos thing is a big deal and potentially a big problem for Jeff Sessions. So Jeff Sessions may have perjured himself to Congress in the way he answered the question that Al Franken posed that almost led to his dismissal by Donald Trump. I know all this gets a little deep in the weeds sometime, but Sessions now has to figure out a way to explain how he could not have been aware of the fact that George Papadopoulos was arranging a meeting or offering to do the same between Vladimir Putin and the president, or someone the president would choose. Mm-hmm. Because Sessions swore He's never been a part, witness to, or any piece of, had any piece of a conversation involving Russia. And he said it more than once. But when you say it to Congress, and you've sworn that your testimony is truthful.
Right.
Perjury to Congress is a crime.
Yes. That was a national security meeting in Washington, D.C. that would have been in March of last year.
Meanwhile, Seth Meyers, late night last night after all of us went to bed, even after the World Series. Here's Seth Meyers on the Papadopoulos indictment.
I love how Trump's team tried to play it cool and keep things under wraps, and then Trump went on national television and said this.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
Oh, my God. I would love to play poker with Donald Trump. You just know he holds his cards facing out. Donald, okay, here's the plan. Don't tell anyone we're trying to collude with Russia. Okay, that's great. Slight adjustment to that plan. What if I go on TV and ask Russia to collude with us? But I'll say, Russia, if you're listening, you know, to play it cool, to be... So there'll be a nice, cool gray area. Not like Trump could easily distance himself from Papadopoulos now, because during the campaign, he went out of his way to tout him as a member of his foreign policy team.
If you want, I could give you some of the names. I wouldn't
be delighted.
I wouldn't mind. Carter Page, PhD, George Papadopoulos. He's an oil and energy consultant. Excellent guy.
And yet, despite that, Trump and his allies have tried to insist that they barely knew Papadopoulos. First, Trump himself tweeted, few people knew the young, low-level volunteer named George, who is already proven to be a liar. I love that he just calls him George in that tweet, because you know he took like 15 tries at Papadopoulos. Few people knew George Platypus, Metropolis. Hop on Papadopoulos, F it, George. I'll just go George.
That's great.
It's Seth Meyers from last night. You know, the Carter Page reference, too. Carter Page, that dude is wackadoodle. That's the guy who had the really bad MSNBC experience where he basically looked in the camera and went, what are you talking about, Russia? I've never heard of Russia. I don't even know what Russia is. How do you spell Russia? Is that with a silent P? I don't know where Russia is. Who's Russia? I was never there. And within like 2 minutes, under the heat of questioning at MSNBC and being sarcastic, he went, yeah, I know everything there is about Russia. I know all of it. This has segued all the way to now, all the way to now. Where from the beginning, he had nothing to do with Russia. Maybe he answered a question or two. Here's what Carter Page is saying now.
Were you guys on email chains together, you and Papadopoulos?
Look, there's a lot of emails all over the place when you're in a campaign.
Right, but yes or no, like, were you in email chains with Papadopoulos?
Probably a few, yeah.
Were you in email chains with him about Russia?
It may have come up from time to time. Again, you know, there's nothing major, yeah.
Well, I mean, nothing major. It was enough for him to lie to federal investigators about and then plead guilty to that he was having an intermediary come to him and saying, you should come to London and talk to someone who's got Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've been focused on other things today.
Carter Page is the kind of guy to go, you killed him, right? No, I didn't kill him. Hey, you killed him, right? Yeah, I killed him. Oh, yeah, absolutely, I killed him.
Well, listen, I've been focused on other things today.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep, it's happening again.
We will take a listener off the air. I'll make the pick for the listener, but we'll take a listener off the air at 312-981-7200, and they will get the wealth of my knowledge. An obvious victory. Let's go to Commissioner Sandberg. Where are we going first?
Well, do you want to know who won last week?
Yeah.
Mike and Mary, they were in first place.
What?
We did?
Yeah.
Isn't that 2 weeks in a row?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
All right, you got to give us a season total. When are we going to get a season total?
I can give you a season total.
Should have been 3 weeks in a row.
No, I don't mean now. Really. You can tote it up
later.
You
have one first place. You have two second place finishes. You have two third place finishes. You have two fourth place finishes and one fifth place finish.
Well, I like to share.
Dave and John have the most first place with 4 first place finishes.
And Mary and her conscience
Mary
have two?
Mary and Jake have 3 first
Wow.
place.
Yep. Could have been 4.
All right.
Yeah. We're close.
All right. So I'll pick with a listener. You want me to go first or last? I'll go last.
I was going to have our celebrity go first.
All right. Who's our celebrity this week?
My husband.
Oh. Pat Boyle, Comcast, NBC Sports Chicago. Good morning, Pat.
So who canceled on you, Mary?
I forgot to book somebody. So.
It's all not right. true. The other night I asked Pat.
Yeah, it was weird. You booked me, which is odd. I would have thought my wife would have had the in on that one.
The even weirder part is I was at the house. Yeah. Mary was coming back from a yoga class, and Pat and I are sitting there in pajamas watching the World Series.
The most bizarre thing about that is that you didn't ask Mary before you booked.
Yeah.
And get the okay.
I'll grant you. It was a risk.
Yeah.
All right, so our celebrity is picking what game this week? You had a chance to look at the schedule?
I'm going with the Tennessee Texans, coming off a great game last week where they lost in Seattle, 41-38. They're at home to take on Indy. They are one of the
Are you talking about the Houston Texans? You said the Tennessee Texans.
The Houston Texans.
Houston hosting Indy.
Houston Texans.
Got it.
And they're going to ride the wave of the Astros World Series win, and they are going to take care of Indy 34-24, the final.
That's pretty good. Oh, pretty good.
It's a good pick.
You should consider a sports career.
What's wrong with that clock?
Yeah, I was going to say, was that a 30-second pick?
Thank you.
Sounds sick.
Thank you. He was pretty good.
He went over the 10 seconds. Though.
He did. I forgot to tell him the format that we only get 10 seconds.
Well, you forgot to book him, let's be honest.
I know. You would ask me if Pat could do it, and then I never asked him. And then when I was on the phone with you, you said, did you ask Pat? And he could hear you. And I was like, oh,
I appreciate you covering up the pajama
story. I mean,
what
did that take him, like 17 minutes to get that out? I mean, come on.
But the pajama story is really the truth. All right, next.
Cochran.
All right. I'm going to pick for the celebrities here. We're going to go Giants-Rams in the I Don't Care Bowl. Giants winning. What? Winning 17-15.
Oh, you just lost that one.
Wow, she's gotten cocky.
Which Mary was that?
Yeah.
Is that a
you call that a pick?
It's like Sybil.
I need the news department.
It's unbelievable.
All right, you ready, Steve?
Why don't Pat, pick an NBA game?
You Pat, chime in and heckle here? Anytime you want here.
Steve, I'm thinking the Raiders over Dolphins. What do you think?
That looks good.
All right,
I like
you pick the score.
How about 37-23?
I'm good with that.
Is that a score?
Yeah.
Hey, don't be dissing us. We, Dave, Steve and I are a team. We work together.
Yeah, great.
Unlike
great. Pat Boyle, for the remaining picks, if you could just give us an audio thumbs up or thumbs down. Thumbs up would be, thumbs down would be, what'd you think of that one?
That was pretty good. I like that one.
Thanks, okay. Pat.
Right. And
Dave and John.
Well,
John says New Orleans 27, Tampa Bay 24. And I'll go along with it.
Did you ever speak to John about that pick?
No.
That's a stretch of a pick.
Crap, all the good games are picked.
What's your thought on the Ennett pick, Pat?
Yeah, I like that one as well. I'm not a Tampa believer this year. Yeah.
Thank you,
Pat.
He
goes out on a limb there,
both
Pat.
Dave and Pat agreeing with John's pick.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm.
John, wink, wink.
It's nice if you let John play the game once before the season's over.
He's sleeping right now, John. I do know that. So, Mary and Mike.
I mean, there's no games left. I mean, geez. I mean, everybody took the best game.
Quiet. Where's that clock? Okay, Atlanta over Carolina. 24.
I mean, are we going to put a score out there or what?
17.
What?
You even do the what right.
I mean, I don't even care anymore. I mean, just.
Did you ever care?
We lost that.
No, I just, you know, can we just get to the traffic here? I mean,
we're
already late.
How's Steve doing?
Well, he's still out there trying to get these skunks out of the garage, but guess what? Still stinks.
Oh, God.
What's the final score? I didn't even hear the pick.
24-17.
Atlanta over?
Carolina.
Atlanta over Carolina. Yeah, by the way, Pat, what's wrong with Carolina?
Up and down play from Cam Newton. I actually don't like that pick, though. I think Carolina's going to win at home.
Well, of course he doesn't.
Sorry, Mary and Jake. Sorry about that.
That's not Jake. That's Mary's
conscience. I agree with Pat on that.
Dave and Pat agreeing again.
Hey, Mary's conscience, what do you think of Dave chiming in?
Well, I really don't care for him too much. And this sports expert we got on the phone here, what is that again? NBC, what, the crap snet or something? Something like that?
I'm picking Tennessee instead of Houston. What's the deal with that?
I mean, what'd you get? What are these opinions from? David Kaplan or something?
There's a lot
never
wrong.
Never from him, never.
Is that everybody?
That is everybody.
That's everybody. And a listener at 312-981-7200. You can be a big winner just by playing our game. Call now and say, I want in. I want to be Steve's friend. And we'll take care of that. Pat, when are you on?
I'm on this weekend. Hawks have two games Saturday and Sunday. So I will be I'll be on the air before and after each game.
And you appear on a David Kaplan show on another radio station that rhymes with ESPN. when is that?
Usually Mondays and like Thursday or Fridays. So,
all right, next time you're on with him, just look him in the eye and go, Cochran says you've made a terrible career mistake coming over here.
Okay, right. I will do that.
Tell him we miss his shower videos too, Pat.
No, don't go crazy.
Don't say that.
Don't egg him on.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
913. Don't misunderstand the conversation. I mean, I think all of us would agree this murderous animal that mowed down people in New York deserves the worst that could happen to him. But we have an American judicial system, and the tenets of that judicial system need to be followed. That's the conversation that's going on in and around with the president. Tweeted last night about throwing him in Guantanamo and executing him. The president just makes it worse because he does too many things. At 9:13, my friend Laura Caldwell will be here shortly, and she's been one of the first to step up to take care of the wrongfully convicted, in prison. And there's an event coming up we want to talk about with her. But before we get to that, we've got some stuff we haven't done in the rest of the show. And one of those stories involves Chrissy Hynde from the Pretenders. Where was she playing?
Love Chrissy Hynde. Saw the Pretenders last year. They were playing in Dubai on Halloween. And apparently, she had a little bit of a meltdown. She had a problem with people using their camera phones.
She went full diva, huh?
Full diva. Apparently telling the crowd, quote, stop using your blanking phones. Stick them up your blank. Four songs.
Did she say it in Arabic?
Because maybe
they didn't understand.
No, this is English. This is English. She said she ain't Lady Gaga or Katy Perry, so if you want to use your blanking phones, go and see them. We're a rock band. And she made an obscene gesture, kind of like the Roseanne Barr national anthem gesture.
But here's the thing. You made this point off the air a few minutes ago to me, and I completely agree.
Yeah.
Who goes to a concert now? And I'm not talking about just kids here.
Mm-hmm.
Who goes to a concert now and doesn't pull out a phone and take a picture?
In fact, I saw Katy Perry last week, and she said, everybody pull out your phones and turn on the light. And then, you know, we all pointed them up at the sky. And everybody uses their phones either to take a picture or record video. It just is. I mean, that's just
so
the way it
is
right
now. So is this a little
bit
of little old lady going off here?
Yeah, she apologized. She went on
Facebook.
She's
got to be 60, isn't she?
Yeah,
she's older than that.
She's around 60 or 61. I'll check her age. But she posted an apology. She did go on Facebook.
Well, yeah, but her apology is not much.
No, her apology said, I'm sorry, this is who I am. I didn't mean to be a bitch, is what she said on Facebook.
But it's one of those apologies like, hey, look, if it offended you,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
It is. It says, I want to apologize for being a bit of a bitch when it came to camera phones. I'm just being myself in general. When I'm not on the stage, I like to retain a very ordinary profile, and I get embarrassed by uninvited attention.
But you were on stage.
She was on stage, yeah. So.
This was not somebody taking a picture of her on the street.
No, and it's weird. It's not, again, it's 2017. People are going to use their phones at concerts.
Is Chrissy Hynde in a position where she should be telling ticket-buying fans to go F themselves?
I don't think so. They were great. I saw them last year. They opened for Stevie Nicks. They were better than Stevie Nicks. She was great. I don't know why she needs to go full on diva. She just has to accept that people are going to use their phones. She said I guess there was a concert after this too. It must have been yesterday because this was on Halloween. And there were signs that were posted around the venue telling people not to use their phones while the band is on stage.
If she is...
I don't know how you can enforce that,
no,
though.
No, you can't. Well, the one way you enforce it is the same way you enforce it in any other way. If you come up with blocking technology to literally block the signals of the phone, but then legally you need to tell people that their phones are blocked.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
She's 66, by the way.
66. Oh, she still sounds good. Apparently doesn't like the camera phones, though.
Yeah. No, it's not good. And by the way, it was a facetious question.
Yeah.
Nobody should tell people who pay money to see them to, shove their phone up their
right
butts.
She cut this concert short, too, because she was so angry about this. And then at the end of the Facebook message said that we'll be back. We'll see you again soon.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm fairly clear that they're probably not going to pay. Walter Jacobson's perspective available anytime online at WGNradio.com and is always sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
9:20, time for a regular feature called Steve's Favorite People. often features Laura Caldwell, who joins us now in studio. Hi.
Now I know it's true that you've always told me you can come into the show whenever you want, and when we're calling it My Favorite People.
Yeah, My Favorite People.
I love that.
Of course, you walk in the studio, and there was something playing out of your phone that was not this show. What
it was.
This? Are you
cheating?
It was
a commercial for this show.
You're cheating.
You just don't listen to your own ads.
All right, so before we get to the topic, how are you?
Fantastic.
I'm feeling great.
I'm feeling great. It's fall. It's moody. It's
How's your dog child?
The dog child at the dog Schaefer. She's fantastic. A lot of ennui right now. You know, she's kind of like a dog.
Ennui or ennui wee?
Ennui wee. Good point. Yeah. She's 6 years old going on 16.
Yeah.
She's
likes
in
to
that
be
circle.
Pampered.
Oh, yes. She's disappointed that we're not going to Bavaria this year. I'm at the point where I can just mock myself and just full on
I think it's cute. It's realistic.
Highly amusing. We were talking a few minutes ago about the fact, and you're modest about this, but you're one of the first people to take up the cause as one of the great fights of your life for wrongfully convicted people.
Well, actually, I wasn't the first.
One of the first.
No, not in Illinois.
One of the first.
One of the first was Northwestern Center on Wrongful Convictions. Another was University of Chicago. Here's what I picked up. I do thank you for that. And here's what I picked up on was just the after part. Just like, wow, that's a tough journey. We got some cool attorneys in this state, not enough, but working for the innocent. And how can we help those great organizations out with their clients when they got out? So we were, you know, picking up that end. And that's when I started talking your ear off.
And you taught me all about it and things I didn't know and things most people didn't know and probably still don't know. Why would you? And because you were smart enough to realize who's got energy about this, who's got passion, who's got idealism about this? Law students, kids.
Exactly. And the great thing is, for a while we said, hey, if you've just gotten out of prison and everyone knows you're innocent and you've gone back to the criminal court and they've admitted it, hey, can we help you get a resume? Can we help you do this? Eventually, though, you know, we realized that the law students really needed to do any kind of legal work that maybe it wasn't the, you know, the bigger stuff, but getting your criminal records cleaned up is not small. Anyone who's
it's a big deal.
Had even a stupid been up at Wrigley and had a cop pull you over and now there's something on your record and that's going to get dismissed. But guess what? It's sticking around for the next 6 years until you go back and pick it up and you're just going to be like, wow, I walked out of Murphy's.
And it comes up in every aspect of your digital life at times you don't expect it to come up.
Exactly. And it comes up. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
And when you apply for a job, when you apply for an apartment, when you apply for a loan. And now there's a number of websites. One's called My Life. One's called something else. It's starting to be the number one search result where they go into sites and pick up everything about you on the web and then process it, and they give you a score. I don't know if it's how cool or uncool.
You search for an old girlfriend, old boyfriend. You do it a high school reunion. You look back. So you try to find an address for somebody. Yeah. You go on LinkedIn, whatever. And you do one of these search sites that he's talking about. It comes up where you've lived.
Yeah.
But one of the things that comes up is criminal convictions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That comes up, like, you know, and again, it could be something innocent that you did as an idiot kid, or it could be something where you were wrongfully convicted. You actually wrote a book about one of your folks.
I did. Jovan Mosley was a client of mine who I represented at 26th Street here in Chicago, and he had been in a, he got picked up for being near a fight that, you know, as we're talking about being near Wrigley, you know, all of us Chicagoans could be near a fight at some point. But he saw a fight and got picked up. And 6 years later, he was still in a holding cell and had no trial date. And they had set a bond so high because a man had died in the fight that he
And how long was he in jail?
5 years, 10 months, and 6 days.
Oh, my God.
And here's the thing. That's one of the good news stories.
Mm-hmm. Because we got him and not guilty.
Yeah, because, you know, people that did 20.
Oh,
25. 30.
30. 43. I just met a gentleman who did
43 years and he was innocent.
Yep.
Oh, it's outrageous. It's just
when you do that, when you crunch the numbers, you know, everybody's very data driven these days. And when you crunch the numbers, it's even more impressive. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Just the ones we know about. If anyone's curious, like, there's something called the National Registry of Exonerations. And this is kind of it's run by University of Michigan at Stanford. And they kind of just take the cases and report on them where we can really tell that this person was exonerated.
And, you know, there's cases where I've wondered if someone shouldn't be in there. And they say, well, we couldn't put them in there because that was a technicality or whatever. So of the people that are in there, there's about 2,000 that we are recognizing in the whole United States. But
that are still in?
Nope, that are out and that we're recognizing as innocent. So we recognize 2,000 people as innocent in the United States. But if only 5% of the jail population is innocent, that's 110,000 people who are still in jail.
So many of the exonerees are cleared by DNA testing. And there wasn't the technology, I guess, in the 70s and 80s like there is now. So why isn't that immediate, Laura? Why isn't that the first thing that you do is test the DNA? Because now the states and then the country still backlogged that you have to continue to wait a few years to test the DNA.
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. And it's not necessarily accurate that all of the or a big majority of exonerations are happening from DNA. There are other reasons, too. There are witnesses who come forward. I was just in Colorado. The DA out there was giving people cars to testify in certain
cars to testify to help his.
Yeah.
Agenda.
Like just say you saw that guy stab him. No, man, I didn't see him stab him. Look, I'll give you a Toyota. It's a 2007. But
wow.
So then that's an incentivized witness. So there's other reasons. And memory we know is fallible. So sometimes people would be so sure that it was this person. And then later DNA or sometimes other evidence will show it was, in fact, someone totally different.
Well, we also know in Chicago, in New York, in Dallas, in Miami, and major cities all over the country, we had a corrupt system, you know, where you had people, and it happens in small towns too, obviously.
Correct. I think it happens everywhere, and we are a big city with a big police force, and so statistically, we're going to have some bad apples. And then we know that certain areas, we now call them districts, were just a little bit more known for their really ratcheting up the techniques and being a little more of the, I'm pretty sure this guy did it, so I'm my own brand of justice. And that's where I heard you talking earlier about, you know, Trump and Gitmo and all this business. And you said something about, I don't know that you mentioned due process specifically, but really, we in the United States are about due process. And it doesn't matter what we all think, even if you individually think something about someone or he admitted it. We have processes in the United States. You should be arrested fairly, interrogated fairly, and tried fairly. And if we go through these every time with everybody,
you have to.
Then we've got a better chance of getting it right.
We also have to, because everything in law is based on precedent. So the first time you take somebody out, you just go, well, we'll just kill them. Well, then the Constitution no longer exists, the system no longer exists, and it all breaks down.
Correct.
Because the guy in New York, we know he did it. We know he should be in jail for the rest of his life. We know really bad things should happen to him. But that's not how the system works.
And then, in my novelist brain, I then spin out of what happens for that. So, you say there's a cop and he's like, we know it's this guy. We're taking him out. What happens then to that family? And what happens to that police officer when, frankly, 4 years after that, he realizes he was wrong? He was real sure at the time.
Right.
And then he's hiding this thing, and that affects his family. I mean, really,
what's happening?
Rush
Laura
to judgment.
Laura's writing.
I'm starting to write a new novel. Can
She's
you tell?
Writing a new book right now.
I really
Laura
am.
Caldwell has written how many books?
16.
16.
And they're all
well. The
great.
Last one I didn't totally write. It was an anthology called Anatomy of Innocence.
That's 16 still.
That is 16 still.
That is unbelievable. And
that's how long we've known each other.
Yeah, and all of your books are where?
All my books are available on all digital platforms, bookstores. You can order them from bookstores, but certainly on your iBooks and your Amazon,
what about your website?
Kindle.
Just go to your website.
Thanks, honey. LauraCaldwell.com. I see. You're looking at me like, this is your opportunity.
No, I'm just saying.
To give your website.
Can I ask one thing real quick? You brought Amanda Knox, which was her story was fascinating. It was a great lecture. Are you working on any other lectures that you're going to be bringing people to Chicago?
Well, it's interesting. Tonight I'm appearing at the Northwestern Center on Wrongful Conviction annual benefit. And I'm appearing with another Joey Mogul, who's a fantastic criminal defense lawyer. And Northwestern Center on Wrongful Convictions is one of the ones who does the big, hard work here in town. So I'm very honored to be honored there tonight.
We should be honored to be honored, and they should be honoring you. Yeah. Karen Daniel is who?
Karen Daniel is the director at the Center on Wrongful Convictions, and she's going to be a friend of the show. You're going to love her. She's right up the street, and you're going to be fascinated with, they've started a Women in Innocence. The majority of women who were wrongfully convicted of killing a spouse or a child or someone they were taking care of.
Wow.
So talk about adding a layer of complexity. So Karen is doing some amazing work, and we'll be introducing you, and she'll be a friend of the show for sure.
Congratulations on the honor.
Thank you.
And highly deserved.
And can I give one more shout out so my family's law firm is 102 years old, Caldwell Burner and Caldwell. Mm-hmm. And my uncle has been on the bench, Mike Caldwell, for 2 decades, and he is stepping down on Saturday. So we're family and from forever. We're fetting him.
A career well played out, huh?
Yeah, a family in the law. We're trying to make it work.
Well, that's great. And seriously, it's me, but in all seriousness, and I know Andrea feels the same way. Thank you for everything you've done and for inspiring these kids at Loyola.
Oh, yeah.
And opening, you know, we talk about this with charity with little mm-hmm. kids. Like, you need to show little kids how to give back.
Yeah.
You need to show them how to give. You need to show these law students, which Laura did, she won't take credit for it once again, which Laura did, the fact that you, at your tender age, yeah. without being through the bar, without being a lawyer yet, you can change the world. And
that
those kids
so
go
true.
Out and do it. You should mm-hmm. feel great about that.
Thank you. I will accept that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, she accepted one.
No, but I got to get off the air before she takes it back. Mm. She'll take it back in 2 seconds if I don't get off the air. Love you and love having you on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Love you, Laura.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
What a Caldwell stuff to deal with, isn't she, huh? Unbelievable.
Right? That's great.
It's 9:41. Every year at this time, Andrea Darlis is usually hanging around with her friends at the Hellenic Museum, gearing up for their big night. And it turns out their big night's tonight.
Yeah, big night's tonight. It's the annual Cuisina, and this is basically an eating frenzy, Steve. It started
How's that different than any other Greek weekend?
It started out with a couple of restaurants. Now it's one of the biggest food, I guess, festivals, if you will, indoor. All of the it all benefits the National Hellenic Museum, basically the only Greek museum in the country. So it's a wonderful museum in Greek town. So we have.
And, I haven't had a chance to meet Elizabeth. Elizabeth,
yes, Elizabeth.
I'm sorry. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And Elizabeth, help me with the pronunciation on your last name.
Tokarczuk.
No one's ever mispronounced that, have they?
Oh, no, of course not.
No, 400%. Executive chef for your own catering company?
I actually work for Karen and Gina Stefani.
Okay. Oh, the Stefanis,
yes.
Of course. And do you specialize in Greek cuisine, or do you do everything?
No, we do everything. This is just something that we do. We did a little Greek something with a twist for the Cuisina event for tonight.
And what is Greek with a twist?
Can
you tell us, or will you have to kill us?
Oh, no. I'm going to tell you, and I brought it for you to try.
Okay.
So it is a chilled cannellini bean salad with pickled Wild Wonder cherry tomatoes, shaved celery and onion, and some torn fresh herbs with a tarragon vinaigrette, some grilled limes, and then it's a grilled baby octopus. So,
but hold on a second. I don't think of a Greek feast as healthy. This sounds very healthy.
That's where we get the twist. But when you taste it, I swear, there's nothing healthy tasting about it. It is fattening and delicious. And
Dave, this is a dream for you.
It is a dream for you. Healthy.
This is a dream for you. Stuff that's kind of healthy but tastes like real food.
I didn't know the healthy stuff that I always eat could really taste that good.
No, it's unbelievable.
I know most people think octopus and all they want to do is bread it and fry it, but it's amazing grilled. I actually prefer it.
I've had grilled octopus. It's great. Yeah.
Delicious. Yeah.
Dave actually gets his own. He goes into the
I raise them. They're farm-raised.
Yes, farm-raised right at the end of his
Dave's
cul-de-sac.
Calamari.
And we didn't meet either. I apologize.
No worries. I'm Helene Janitis. I work at the museum.
And why is it that every Greek get-together, whether it's families or whatever the case may be, you have to eat and eat and then send out for more food and eat some more? What is the story?
Because it's the root of everything. Gathering in the kitchen, bringing the family together, sharing in your grandmother's recipes, grandfather's recipes, depending on the family. It's the center point for us.
The first thing you do, I mean, and this is probably for every Greek family, is you go to someone's house and they say, are you hungry? What can I get you? No, just a cup of coffee is fine, or nothing, most people say. But no, you go to a Greek's house, they have to make you something. And if you don't take seconds, there's something wrong with you, or the food's not good enough.
You should speak to that, the protocol piece of this, because, those of us who aren't members of the family or the tribe, if you don't mean to offend, you need to eat until you can't eat anymore, I assume, right? Am I wrong?
It's usually good policy to just keep eating.
Right.
You don't want to offend a Greek grandmother, But we understand everyone reaches their breaking point, but we'll still say you look skinny and you should eat
oh,
more.
Oh, yeah.
And exactly. You should take some with you.
Yes, definitely.
Big time.
Right.
Big time.
Sadly, at Cuisina, there are no goodie bags to take home food in, no takeaway bags. Everyone eats everything.
But Cuisina used to be specifically just a Greek menu. Now it's a little bit of everything.
It's a twist on the classics of Greek cuisine.
Okay.
So we have Greek restaurants as well as non-Greek restaurants or catering companies come in and just do their spin. We really like that fusion that we see at Cuisina between cultures.
I like it. Cuisina means kitchen, literally, mm-hmm. which is cool. But you go in and there's, you know, you could sample all the different foods from all the different restaurants. And I don't mean sample like a little bite-sized portion. Every portion that you get is like a mini meal. So it's great.
Would this be approved by the family Papagiannakopoulos?
Yeah, that's Darlis was shortened from Papagiannakopoulos years ago.
What do you mean, Haya? How is that shortened?
<see? laughs>
I still don't understand how Darlis came out of Papagiannakopoulos.
I know. Is Janitas short?
I'm not sure. It might be, but we've been here long enough that it's all we know is Janitas.
I interviewed an actress yesterday. She's performing in this place, School of Rock, and she didn't want to give. She gave me her full name. It was one of the longest Greek names I've ever heard in my life, but it's shortened to to Reed, which I think is her mom's maiden name. Mm-hmm. So she said, "Yeah, it went from blah, 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 to Reed."
All right, but Elizabeth, you are not Polish.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you are.
Oh yeah.
So since you're Polish, you're not Greek. See how I did that? So how is it you come to be someone who could do this sort of twist? Is it just your own creativity as a chef?
Part of it's creativity. And then our salesperson, Tom Kokonakis, is a total Greek.
Hold on a second. Is this Tom Kokonakis? That's the greatest name I've ever heard. From a long line of Kokonakises. This is tremendous.
And actually, my first real name is Anastasios Kokonakis, so you can't get more Greek than that.
How big is your driver's license? That's a lot of letters to get in.
Yeah, I really had to write really small.
Kokonakis. I'm changing my name.
His name's Anastasios. My cousin, my grandma was Anastasia, so we have about 10 of those in the family, but they've gone from Stacy to Tressa to
those
Teresa.
Those are all fine, but I'm talking about the Kokonakis. That's a tremendous name.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Do you know how to spell it?
I do.
All right, let me hear it.
It's Anastasios.
Yep.
Kokinakos.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. That is very impressive.
Growing up, people couldn't say it, so I just went by Tom.
Well, you guys are going to have a huge party tonight. All right, so Andre, you've been there many times. Tell me what happens at the party.
Cocina, it's wonderful. There's still a couple of tickets still mm-hmm. available.
How do you get tickets, Emily?
Go ahead.
You can go. At this point, tickets are available only at the door. So come on by to the museum. We're in Greektown, 33th South Halsted Street.
Don't eat today. Eat tonight.
Yeah, just come and eat at the museum with us.
There's a dessert room, Steve. You know, there's like a dessert table. Am I making this
room.
Up? There's an entire room of dessert.
And Elizabeth, what is Thanksgiving like for you? Do you have to do all the cooking?
Yeah. Well, I choose to do it.
Well, you do.
Thanksgiving.
So you love it.
There's
You'll
a
cook
room
all the time.
That's definitely dedicated just to food in our
yeah,
house.
Yeah, because we should say, it's not like Polish families don't know how to eat. They do. But who taught you how to cook? Was it a grandmother or somebody? Or who inspired you?
My grandmother and my dad.
And your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, my mom could burn water, but my dad was the one. My dad's the one who cooked in our house, so that I was standing up on a chair with a wooden spoon in my hand at a very young age.
Well, that's a great thing. It sounds like you love your career.
I do, and I cook at home, which everybody thinks is weird.
Wow.
See, and it all ties in together because my grandmother used a wooden spoon too, but for other reasons.
Yes. So,
I think that's the first reason they were in our house.
Yeah.
And have you got somebody you're teaching the cooking to now? Like, is there a little person in your life that you're teaching?
I have many nieces and nephews.
That's what
my
I mean.
Yes, my little nephews, but they think that the eggshells go in the eggs. We haven't quite got past that point yet.
All right. Well, you'll get there. You'll get there. Helene, one more time for the tickets that are available. Show up tonight where?
At 33 South Halsted Street at the National Hellenic Museum. They're $125 at the door.
And you'll get $4,911 worth of food.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Definitely.
Yes. And you can support the Hellenic Museum all year. It doesn't just have to be tonight.
That's true. We have tours, educational programs every day at the museum. So come on by, schedule a tour for your group or organization. Bring your school by for a tour.
That's a great idea.
Public programs every Thursday night and on Sunday afternoons.
And one of the greatest rooftops to rent.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Beautiful skyline
view. Come have your wedding at the museum, your holiday party. It's beautiful.
All you know, when I'm hanging out with the Kokonakises, that's where we're used to. Yeah. Nice to meet you guys. We're going to eat your food now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN.